Hello and welcome to another broadcast brought to you by AIRS LA, the audio internet reading service of Los Angeles. My name is Nancy Porter and I will be sharing articles from the May 30th issue of The Week magazine, which is a magazine with condensed versions of news articles from global sources. I need to remind you, you'll be listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on AIRS LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers, and no unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. All right, we're going to finish up with three small articles from the May 30th, 2025 issue. These are the best columns from the United States. Headline, Why Trump's Corruption is So Brazen. This was written by Ross Barkin and comes from the New York Magazine. No president has ever hung a for sale sign over the White House like Donald J. Trump, said Ross Barkin. His unabashed corruption has been shrugged off by his MAGA base, most Republicans, and even much of the public, because it is so open and so in keeping with his amoral character. Even his supporters assume he is at least slightly corrupt, and to them, his brazenness almost seems like a form of honesty, because he makes no attempt to hide his gold-plated greed. When he announced he planned on accepting a $400 million luxury jet from Qatar, he shamelessly insisted that he needed an Air Force One as opulent as the jets of the Middle East kings and other tyrants. Thanks to his STRUMP meme coin hustle, his family has reaped millions of dollars on transaction fees alone, and now has a reserve worth billions, at least on paper. Earlier, he hauled in $239 million from businesses for his second inaugural, giving him a slush fund for the rest of his life. Trump need not fear prosecution for his corruption, since the Supreme Court has granted him immunity for his official acts. And congressional Republicans have proved they will never convict Trump in an impeachment trial. So, over the next 3 years, we can expect more of the same or worse. All right, the next short article, the headline, The U.S.'s Wealth Gap with Europe. This was written by Yasha Monk in the publication titled The Dispatch. The average American is now vastly more affluent than the average European, said Yasha Monk. GDP per capita in the United States is $83,000, nearly twice that of France and Italy, and far more than even the wealthier European countries such as Germany, $54,000, and the United Kingdom, $50,000. The U.S. does have more very rich people, but Americans are pulling away from their European counterparts in median disposable income as well. And that statistic isn't influenced by outliers at the top. Many metrics show the United States is far more affluent. The average American home is 2,200 square feet, compared with 1,200 for Germany and 800 square feet in the United Kingdom. This extra space translates into all kinds of everyday amenities, from washer-dryer units to extra bathrooms to bigger refrigerators. Americans also dine out more frequently. Such a narrative might not fit with American progressives' fixation on the inadequacies of the welfare state and the legacy of structural racism, or right-wing depictions of a dystopian America whose middle class has been gutted. Europe has unique beauty, a more robust welfare system, and stronger community ties. But there is no denying that a significant economic gulf separates America and Europe. And the last little article from the May 30th issue will be this one. Headline, is this Georgia or Gilead? And this was written by Monica Hesse and appeared in the Washington Post. Welcome to Gilead, said Monica Hesse. Every week, America is becoming more and more like the totalitarian patriarchal society depicted in Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. Consider the ongoing horror show in Georgia, where Adriana Smith, an Atlanta nurse in her ninth week of pregnancy, was declared brain dead after blood clots formed in her brain. Against the strong wishes of her family, a hospital is keeping Smith alive with a ventilator and a feeding tube because state law forbids abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. The exception to save the life of the mother does not apply, since Smith's life can't be saved. Smith's pregnancy is now over 21 weeks along, with only a few more to go, and doctors have found fluid on the fetus's brain. Smith's mother said, it is torture for me to watch machines keep her daughter from dying peacefully. Meanwhile, her family's hospital bills are mounting. Smith is being treated as an incubator in the most literal sense of the word. State Republicans are justifying this grotesquerie by insisting that the baby must be saved, revealing that the lives of women do not matter. This nightmare is not dystopian fiction. It is our post Roe versus Wade reality. And we will end our coverage of the May 30th issue of The Week magazine. And we will now move to the June 6th, 2025 issue. We'll begin with one of the main stories and how it was covered. Headline, frustrated Trump warns crazy Putin. What happened? President Trump's friendly relationship with Vladimir Putin soured lately, after he called the Russian dictator absolutely crazy for unleashing his largest ever missile and drone barrage on Ukrainian civilians. The Kremlin dismissed Trump's comments as evidence of emotional overload, even as it continued its days-long bombardment of Ukraine with more than 1,300 drones and 90 missiles, killing at least 30 civilians and wounding more than 160. Frustrated that Putin was snubbing his efforts to negotiate peace, Trump warned that the Russian leader was playing with fire and that continuing the war will lead to the downfall of Russia. The Kremlin claimed it would present its peace memorandum outlining its terms for a deal at an upcoming meeting with the Ukrainians. Trump said he determined in about 2 weeks whether Putin is serious about a deal before supporting punitive sanctions, including those in a Senate bill that would slap a 500% U.S. tariff on goods from countries that buy Russian oil and gas. Putin has thus far shown no interest in modifying his maximalist demands, including demilitarizing Ukraine and requiring it to be neutral rather than aligned with the West. In response to intensified Russian aerial attacks and troop movements, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz announced there would be no more range restrictions on Western-provided weaponry. A grateful Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged other world leaders to step up and help end Moscow's sense of total impunity. What the columnists said. Trump's stamping his feet on social media may be childishly ineffective, said Tom Nichols in The Atlantic. but it might signal that he finally comprehends Putin's true goals. His erstwhile pal's continuing slaughter of civilians is now a liability for Trump, making him look foolish and powerless. Comically, he claimed recently that he'd always said that Putin wants all of Ukraine, which conveniently ignores that Trump has repeatedly blamed Zelensky and Joe Biden for somehow starting a war that began with Russia's invasion. Trump may be the only person in the world still surprised by how Putin is behaving, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial, and he should now listen to the genuine realists in the Senate. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham has 82 bipartisan co-sponsors on legislation that would severely punish buyers of Russian energy, which is Putin's financial lifeline. Trump has two options, said Stephen Collinson in CNN.com. He could start supporting Ukraine's fight for survival by resuming arms shipments, though that would be embarrassing politically. Or he could throw up his hands and totally end U.S. involvement, letting Putin's war of attrition grind on for years. The only way to halt the war is with fierce Western pressure, including both arms sale and increased sanctions, said Tamar Jacoby in The Bulwark. But despite his tough talk, Trump has done nothing yet to punish or pressure the Kremlin, and it's unclear if he ever will. All right, let's move on now to the section titled Briefing. Headline, Flying in to danger. America's air traffic control system is in crisis. Can it be fixed? So what's wrong with the system? For starters, there's an acute shortage of air traffic controllers who are responsible for directing about 45,000 flights carrying 2.9 million passengers every day. The Federal Aviation Administration has about 13,800 certified controllers at more than 300 facilities, which is 3,000 below the recommended staffing number. With 90% of control towers understaffed, controllers are routinely expected to put in 10-hour days, 6 days a week. And those controllers have to rely on what the FAA itself describes as outdated technologies that are unable to meet modern demands. Partly because of those cascading problems, 2023 saw 19 serious runway incursions at U.S. airports where a collision was narrowly avoided, the highest number in nearly a decade. Public concern over air traffic control swelled in January after 67 people died in a mid-air crash between a military helicopter and a commercial flight over Washington, D.C. A preliminary FAA report said staffing at the control tower was abnormally low for that particular shift. And concern surged again in April, when controllers for New Jersey's Newark Liberty International Airport lost communication with planes for about 90 seconds due to a single burned-out copper wire. The next month, an air traffic control facility in Colorado suffered a similar outage. "It's a crisis and the public doesn't know about it," said one Newark controller. "Nobody wants to pay attention until actual lives are lost." So why is there a staffing shortage? Air traffic control is a historically understaffed profession, and the pandemic only made things worse. When COVID hit and air travel slowed, the training of new recruits was put on hold, even as many older controllers opted for retirement. These experienced workers cannot be quickly replaced. To be considered for an air traffic controller spot, candidates must be under age 31, have U.S. citizenship, and pass a background check, skills assessment, and medical exam. Only about 10% of applicants to the FAA Academy in Oklahoma City are accepted. The Academy has capacity for 2,500 students, but this year received only 1,950. And only about two-thirds of those complete the training program. "It's a lot of work," said one student. "It's like a full two-year degree in 4 months." After graduating, another 2 to 3 years of classroom and on-the-job experience is required to become a certified controller. The career lifespan of a controller is limited because the profession has a mandatory retirement age of 56. Many quit before then, despite earning six-figure salaries. Why is turnover so high? Answer, because it's a stressful job that controllers are expected to do often less than ideal conditions. In recent years, controllers have submitted hundreds of complaints about rundown facilities with bug and mold infestations, dangerous staffing shortages, and unstable colleagues. Between 2021 and 2023, the FAA received at least 7 reports of controllers sleeping on duty and 5 of people working while under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Some controllers develop physical and/or mental health problems because of nonstop schedules, but avoid seeking professional help because it might cost them their medical clearance. The result is a demoralized, distracted, and exhausted workforce that is more prone to making mistakes. A database of air safety issues maintained by NASA includes numerous accounts of mistakes by weary controllers, including one from a staffer in Southern California who instructed a plane to fly too low and attributed the error of being extremely tired after continuous overtime. So what about technology issues? Much of the equipment in control towers is decades old and analog, while other countries use digital displays and infrared-based systems, American air traffic controllers are trained to use floppy disk, paper flight tracking strips, and World War II-era radars. Nick Daniel, president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, told a March congressional hearing that the FAA has failed to request adequate funding for infrastructure needs for 2 decades. The agency's annual $3 billion budget for facilities and equipment, he said, has forced it to adapt a fixed-on-fail model that leaves little to no money for modernization. So, is anyone trying to repair the system? The Trump administration has promised to supercharge the hiring of controllers who had been spared the cuts inflicted on other government workers. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy recently announced a $5,000 bonus for FAA Academy graduates, with an additional $10,000 bonus for those willing to work at one of the 13 facilities deemed hard to staff, as well as annual 20% bonuses for controllers who stay on past the retirement eligibility mark at 25 years. Duffy has also unveiled plans to replace 618 old radars and build 6 new air traffic control centers, the largest such project since the 1960s. The tax bill, currently working its way through Congress, includes $12.5 billion for modernization over the next 3 years. But the Modern Skies Coalition, an organization that includes unions, aircraft manufacturers, and trade groups, says an extra $18.5 billion in emergency funding is actually needed. So is it still safe to fly? Air travel remains by far the safest mode of transportation. The crash over Washington attracted so much attention in part because of the rarity of such accidents in the United States. It was the first fatal American commercial air disaster since 2009, and the worst since 2001. But some aviation experts worry that after years of safety improvements, things may now be going backward. I have friends and family asking, should I get on an airplane? One retired controller told Axios. And I'm like, well, it's not there yet, but it seems to be trending that way. And finally, a push for privatization. Could a private company run air traffic control better than the government? It's not a new question. The Clinton administration proposed privatization in 1995, only to back away in the face of opposition from corporate jet owners and private pilots, who pay almost nothing to use the current system. Following the crisis at Newark and elsewhere, lawmakers are again contemplating privatization, which would free air traffic control from cumbersome government procurement and requirements that slow the adoption of new technologies. Advocates note that in recent decades, some 60 countries have separated air traffic control from their aviation safety regulators, often by creating an independent government corporation or other nonprofit provider. Under that arrangement, Canada today handles more air traffic with fewer controllers than it did three decades ago. Flying from Canada to the United States is like time travel for pilots, said an aviation consultant, Scott McCartney. You leave a modern air traffic control system run by a company and enter one run by the government struggling to catch up. Well, that's it on air traffic control. We move now to the section on best columns from the United States. Headline, an anti-vax mandate for COVID. This was written by Renee Graham in the Boston Globe. The people who hated mandates are now instituting one of their own, said Renee Graham, Food and Drug Administration officials, Dr. Vinay Prasad, and Martin McCary recently, cast doubt on the need for additional COVID shots for most Americans, indicating the updated vaccine this fall will be available only to people over 65 and those with medical conditions. Prasad is a medical contrarian who publicly assailed vaccine policies, even as the COVID pandemic ravaged communities. And Markery, a former Fox News talking head, ravaged communities and government, the greatest perpetrator of misinformation about the disease. Both of them work for Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a longtime anti-vaxxer who announced COVID shots are no longer recommended for children or pregnant women without providing any evidence for his decision. Now that those supposed libertarians have government power, they're restricting vaccine access even for people who want boosters. The more broad roadblocks they create, the less likely people are to get one. COVID remains dangerous for infants, has left millions of people struggling with long COVID, and continues to mutate to elude immunity. Cutting off vaccines invites more infections, more sickness, and possibly more vaccine-resistant variants. That is not making America healthy again. Next article, headline, anti-missile defense is a scam. This was written by Joe Crincione in the New Republic. President Trump's claim that he will install a fully operational golden dome over the United States by the end of his term is nonsense, said Joe Crincione. Trump says it would take just $175 billion to build an anti-missile defense system with close to 100% protection. but the Congressional Budget Office estimates it would actually cost $831 billion over two decades, and most scientists doubt it will our country's vast size. President Reagan had a similar fantasy of a Star Wars shield that would protect the United States from ballistic missiles. But 40 plus years and $453 billion later, it consists of 44 outdated interceptors. Adversaries could easily overwhelm the system by firing dozens of missiles at the same time, or by first knocking out satellites that are necessary to its operations. It's no coincidence that SpaceX, owned by Trump ally Elon Musk, may be awarded $10 billion in a no-bid contract as part of the Golden Dome. Missile defense is the longest-running scam in the history of the Department of Defense, and Musk will definitely get richer by perpetrating it. And the last article in this section called Best Columns is titled A Dire Need for Political Moderates. This was written by Matt Lewis in the publication titled Substack. Political moderates don't get much respect, said Matt Lewis, but in an age of extremism, the least sexy label might be the most essential temperament. For most of my life, I was considered very conservative, a Reagan Republican who believes in limited government, personal responsibility, and the right to be left the hell alone. My views haven't changed. But then Donald Trump took over the Republican Party, detonating every principle in a 50-mile radius. Suddenly, the balance of power shifted from a liberal cultural elite on the coasts to the Trump right. Instead of a bastion of moral order that respected tradition and norms, conservatism came to sound like a rage-fueled Reddit thread. Rules, decency, and common sense were jettisoned as the MAGA mob purged heretics, idolized dear leader, and cheered on the chaos. Now I'm a man without a movement, too conservative for the left, too sane for the right. Moderate is not a badge anyone wears proudly, but maybe it should be. Moderation might just be the last thing standing between us and the abyss. If that sounds grim, good. Extremist ideologies just may destroy our democracy. All right, and we move now to the section titled Talking Points. Headline, George Floyd. Did Black Lives Matter fail? George Floyd's murder sparked the racial reckoning that wasn't, said Nia Malika Henderson in the publication called Bloomberg. It's now been 5 years since Floyd's murder by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Footage of Floyd's death, with Chauvin kneeling on his neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds while Floyd gasped, "I can't breathe," ushered in a Black Lives Matter movement that galvanized millions to push for racial progress. White people started speaking about the impact of racism, while companies rushed to announce DEI initiatives. Buildings, schools, and roads were renamed. Statues came down. But many of the initiatives promoted by the movement, like police reform, never came to fruition. The number of people killed by police has increased every year since 2020. And the looting that coincided with some protests enabled Republicans to portray a national multiracial uprising as a race riot. Some conservatives now even claim Chauvin didn't actually murder Floyd and have called on President Trump to pardon him. For a brief, inspiring moment in our history, Black Lives Matter seemed to be a turning point, but a backlash fueled by fear helped return Trump to office on a wave of white identity politics. We should be grateful we escaped a dangerous societal overhaul, said Mike Gonzalez in the Wall Street Journal. Floyd's death was a tragedy that Marxists manipulated into a revolutionary movement that saw 2,385 looting incidents and 624 arson incidents. The nation fell into a trance, with corporations and cultural institutions pledging obedience to the new creed. A mass delusion portrayed America as an oppressive nation gripped by systemic racism, whose reigning ideology was white supremacy. Fortunately, America fought back. Floyd's murder was a national shame, not a delusion, said Nakima Levy Armstrong in USA Today. Still, much of 2020's momentum has quietly evaporated. Corporate promises of diversity and inclusion have been abandoned. When the protests faded, an army of reactionaries went to work, said Will Bunch in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Instead of racial progress, we got a Trump-led white backlash. The words diversity and racism have been demonized and banned. Even Washington, D.C.'s Black Lives Matter plaza has been scrubbed clean of its bright yellow letters, erasing one of the movement's most lasting symbols. In the current climate of fear, retribution, and repression, it's almost impossible to imagine how the spark of positive energy that swept America 5 years ago could ever be reignited. And our final article from the June 6th issue of the week will be National Debt, Why Congress No Longer Cares. Now would be a very good time for Washington to bring back the debt obsession, says Roger Karma in The Atlantic. That's because the perfect storm for turning the federal deficit into a genuine crisis has arrived. In recent years, the Federal Reserve has raised interest rates dramatically in an effort to tame inflation. Since that means the federal government has to pay higher interest on its bonds, government payments on debt interest soared to $881 billion in 2024. That's more than the United States spent last year on national defense. At the same time, President Trump's tariff policies have led almost every credible forecast this year to anticipate slowed economic growth. And then there's Trump's big, beautiful, and bloated budget bill, which would add more than $3 trillion to the deficit over the next decade. The warning signals are flashing red. And if Washington continues to ignore them, very bad things can happen. From 1970s-style stagflation to a panicked flight from U.S. treasuries and even a global financial meltdown. So far, bond markets are showing concern, but not panic, said Victoria Guida in Politico. The credit rating from Moody's slightly downgraded the safety of U.S. bonds, and investor unease pushed interest rates on those bonds above 5%. Still, if Congress doesn't heed these warnings and shift the trajectory of the budget bill, which would add trillions of dollars in tax cuts without also making politically painful spending cuts, something even more painful than a mild Moody's downgrade could occur. Don't bet on lawmakers acting responsibly, said Clive Crook in Bloomberg. The 2008 bank bailouts and COVID-related spending under both Democrats and Republicans ballooned the national debt to previously unimaginable levels. It's now at $36.2 trillion. Rather than confront debt of that magnitude, all but a few remaining deficit hawks just stopped thinking about it. Facing it would mean huge spending cuts and major tax increases, both of which are very unpopular. Instead, Republicans are now trying to hide the bill's unfathomable cost from voters, said Jessica Rydell in MSNBC.com. But it's ultimately the voters who will suffer as a result. The rapidly growing debt and massive interest payments create economic drag, diverting wealth away from the investments that would start businesses, create jobs, and raise incomes. As Washington continues to take an ostrich-like approach to the national debt, something large and unpleasant is bearing down on all of us. And we will stop there with our coverage of the June 6, 2025 issue of The Week magazine. I need to remind you again that you have been listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers, and no unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Again, I'm Nancy Porter, and it has been my pleasure to share The Week magazine with you.